Okay. We have six questions. Beginning of the chapter. What is the Chitra Chitragya, Jnanam Gayam, and Prakriti and Purusha? I believe the last question is the question we're going to discuss today. What is Gayam, or what is the goal of knowledge? What is the actual goal? What is to be understood? You heard the process of knowledge last week. So now we want to know, okay, if you follow this process, what are we going to know? So the goal of knowledge, that will be today's topic, the goal of knowledge. And you'll find out it's very similar to a previous topic that you had, I think, in your first class, 2 weeks ago. So I'll read the verse. I can't see it at the moment. Okay, verse 13, 13th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, verse 13. I shall now explain the knowable, knowing which you will taste the eternal. I think I'll sing the Sanskrit because it's nice. Gayam yatya pravakshyami yajyatvam ritamashnute anadimat param brahma nasatanasaruchute. So the first word, gayam, is the topic of today's class, verses 13 to 19. This verse 13 is describing the soul, which another name for the soul is Brahman. I shall now explain the knowable, knowing which you will taste the eternal. Brahman, the spirit, beginningless and subordinate to me, lies beyond the cause and effect of this material world. So, the six questions were, what is Kshetra? Who can tell me? Did you learn the Sanskrit terms? Or?
Not entirely, but
we went over them. Yeah. Does anybody know what does Kshetra mean? What is a Kshetra? Yeah.
Field.
A field. Very good. And what is the field, actually?
The body.
The body. The body. Very good. And Kshetragya? Who is, what is the Kshetragya?
Knower
of the field. And who is this Kshetragya? Who is the knower of the field, in other words?
Soul
and super soul.
Yeah.
So this is a very important thing to know. The Kshetragya is the same as the Gayam that we're going to study today. But previously when Krishna was talking about Kshetragya, he didn't explain very much about it, about the two knowers and the differences between them. Can anybody remember what Krishna said? What is the difference between the two knowers of the field? There were two Kshetragyas, the soul and the super soul, and he explained the particular difference between them in verses 2 and 3. Yeah?
One's the witness and the other one is the giver?
No. The witness will come in your next class. You're jumping ahead now. You've already read it, I think. It's true, the super soul is the witness. Yeah, in one sense it's true, the soul and super soul, that's a fact. That there's like two birds in the tree, one bird is eating the fruits. Which bird is that? So, and one bird is just watching the other one and waiting for him to turn to him. And that is the super soul. Soul is trying to enjoy. Super soul is just watching, witnessing, waiting for him to turn to him. So, in the beginning of Gita, the differences were given in verse 2 and 3. That in verse 2 it says that, we get there, this body is called the field. One who knows this body is called knower of the field. So, the soul is a knower of one body. But the super soul is the knower of all the bodies. That's the difference. So, we are soul, we are not super soul. We can know one body, but we can't know all the bodies. And that's the difference. Super soul is in all of the bodies. And we'll hear that one verse today explaining that. But the soul is only in one body. Sometimes impersonalistic people think they are all-pervading like the super soul. But they can't prove it. Like I said in, I think, my first class, we're having classes in the morning, I had one god sister named Jadarani. And she mentioned Prabhupada. And she said to Prabhupada, and Prabhupada said to her, do you live near the temple, near our place here? She said, yes, I am very near. Because she thought she's all pervading, but she lives actually 2 hours away. So it's early in the morning she had to come, when actually the reality dawned that she's not very near, even though she thinks she's all pervading. She had to go 2 hours every morning to get there at 5 or 7 in the morning. Then she was defeated in her thinking that she was all pervading. We are not all pervading. We are just very, very small. Soul is very, very small. Who knows the size of the soul? Yes?
1/10,000,
the tip of a hair. And it must be the tip, not the bottom. The tip is smaller than the bottom. Yes, 1/10,000. That is the size of the soul. Very small. So how can he be all pervading? So let's read a little of this purport. The first paragraph. Lord has explained the field of activities, knower of the field. And he has explained the process of knowing, knower of the field of activities. Now he begins to explain the knowable, first the soul and then the super soul. With knowledge of the knower, both the soul and super soul, one can relish the nectar of life. As explained in the second chapter, the living entity is eternal. This is also confirmed here. There is no specific date at which the jiva was born, nor can anyone trace out the history of the jivatma's manifestation from the Supreme Lord. Therefore, it is beginningless. So, Prabhupada goes back to chapter 2, and I'm also going to go back to chapter 2 in relationship to this verse. Now, this verse, verse 13, is coming right after all those verses about the process of knowledge. And in the process of knowledge, we're hearing about all wonderful qualities, very nice qualities, like humility, pridelessness, nonviolence, as you said. So then verse 13 comes after that and says a very significant thing in the second line, Amrita. If you know the soul and super soul, you will get Amrita, or nectar, in this life. Amrita, nectar. So the second chapter, there is another verse, the 15th verse. It also says, anyone who knows this, that he's not this body, he will taste Amrita in his life. And that verse, it says, Nam yate purusham purusharshava sama dukkha sukham dhiram soramitatvaya apate. So it tells, who is that person who is going to get the nectar of immortality? Now, there's a very famous verse before this verse that says about nectar. Just like here, we have all the qualities. So before that verse about nectar, there's a famous verse in the Sanskrit that says, Matra sparshas tu kumteya, sito snasukatukataha, agama paino nityas tams titikshasa bharatat. Now, Krishna tells one quality there. If you have this one quality, you can taste nectar. Now, in the second chapter, it was a summary, so we only gave one. But it must be a very important one, because it's the first quality that Krishna told Arjuna. It's the first thing he said. You should, first instruction as well. You should have this quality. And happiness and distress, heat and cold. Can anyone tell me? Tolerance. Tolerate, Arjuna. You must tolerate. If you tolerate, you will be eligible to drink nectar. Amrita. So what is this Amrita? Charinamrita. We have Charinamrita. What other amritas do we drink here in our Krishna consciousness movement?
Namamrita.
Namamrita, the holy name, nectar of the holy name. What other amrita, nectar, do we have here?
Karmamrita?
Nectar for the ears, that is, of course. So what is the nectar for the ears? Holy name, Namamrita, and
Bhakti
Rasamrita, okay, the ocean of Bhakti. And Krishna Katamrita, the nectar of discussions of Krishna. These are all the amritas that we can taste here. And this is one here, this Bhagavad Gita, Amrita. And we're all tasting it. So by the end of this class, we should all become immortal, eternal. Or at least we should realize that we are eternal. We're not part of this world. We are soul. Now this verse is talking about us. We should be interested to hear about who we are and what is our nature. Now, we do have a choice here, to drink Amrita or to drink Mrita. You know the difference. Birth or, death or immortality. So I'll just show you a picture for those of you who were not here this morning. Difference between Amrita and Rita. See this picture here. Now, up at the bottom of the picture, we have somebody who has been tasting Rita, or death. This is a cat. The cat has got a rat in the mouth. And what is that rat feeling at this point? What can you tell? How's the rat feeling? Fear.
Pain.
Doesn't know where he's going. I mean, he knows what's going to happen to him, but he doesn't know where. And this is where he's going. Going to death. So this is the people who choose to drink Rita, or the material enjoyment, material life, then this is their destination. And this is how they're feeling at the time of death. Now for the devotees, it's a whole different picture. We've got here the cat, the mother cat here, in the kitchen. Now what is the kitten feeling in the mouth of the mother cat? Security. And?
Love.
Love. And so,
Protection.
Trust. So this is the devotee at the time of death. This is how the devotee's feeling. And he knows, the kid knows my mother's taking me home. So the mother cat's taking the devotee to Krishna. At the time of death, that is the difference. So we should go for the Amrita, and not for the Rita. There was a picture in the old Bhagavad Gita that it showed somebody going after material things. It was like somebody, there was one boy who had a girlfriend, but actually in the picture she was like a skeleton covered with a little cloth, nice cloth, but it was like he was embracing a skeleton. And it had all these different ideas here, so you can kind of get from this picture actually where it's going to lead to if you don't engage your Krishna consciousness, if you don't engage your family, if you don't engage your abilities for the nectar, for the eternal life. So this Gita, Krishna is teaching us how to become immortal, and the way to do that is to understand Krishna in truth. So we are trying today to understand Krishna. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he gave the instruction, the order to his devotees that you should, I might order people to become a spiritual master. So whatever nectar you receive, you should give it to others as well. Explain, you are spiritual. You are a spiritual being. You are not this body. You are a soul. This is Krishna Upadesh. So this verse 13 is about the soul. Now the next verses 14 to 18 are about the super soul. And we should notice when we hear these verses, what are the differences between the soul and the super soul. So we should never mistakenly think we are the super soul. It's not true. And you'll never become super soul, even though some yogis may tell you, you can do this. And sometimes even great yogis make this mistake. They start meditating, and they see the super soul with the four hands, they think, oh wow, it's me. I finally discovered my identity. No, it's not you. They merge and they lose it for, again, millions of years. They merge, they lose their identity, but then again, they have to come back because they're not completely purified. Their karma is still there. Because they haven't realized their eternal relationship with Krishna, and that is the actual goal. The first goal is to know you are the soul. And the second part of the goal is to know the super soul. Then you must know what's the relationship between the soul and the super soul. And that's the title of this chapter, Nature, the Enjoyer, and Consciousness. So that is the material nature, the Supreme Lord, and the soul, soul and super soul. So verse 14, we have a little bit more description about the super soul. Now we're hearing not about the soul. Everywhere are his hands and legs, his eyes, heads, and faces. And he has ears everywhere. This way, the super soul exists, pervading everything. So this is a description. This is another difference between the soul and super soul. So what's the difference here that we notice?
Between,
the super soul has hands and legs everywhere. But we have only, the soul, we have only two hands and two legs. Right? All of you only have two hands and two legs. Not all the collective legs and hands in this room do not belong to you. If they did, then you would be super soul. But they don't. So we are simply soul. But it's a wonderful thing to be, because it's eternal. Soul is also eternal. So the first realization is that these hands and legs, all these others, don't belong to me. Although sometimes we do have that false conception, if we're like the head of a family, that the hands and legs of the children belong to me, and they should do what I want them to do. But when the kid gets a little older, like 18 or 20, then you realize, uh-oh, they don't belong to me, do they? The kid wants to do what he wants with his hands and legs and eyes and ears. And although you have beautiful plans for what your child is going to do when he becomes a certain age, but then it doesn't happen. It doesn't really happen. And we did the same with our parents, so what can we say? So real understanding is that all these hands and legs belong to Krishna. They all belong to Krishna. So the problem with Arjuna was, in the beginning, he was thinking, these hands and legs, they belong to my family. Therefore, I should not use them against my family. I should not kill my relatives. So he was in this misunderstanding that these things belong to me. They belong to us. They are for us to use for our pleasure, for our enjoyment. So therefore, after hearing Bhagavad Gita, he realized, no, these hands and legs belong to Krishna. They are his. Therefore, if they belong to Krishna, then how should I use them? Should I use them for myself, or should I use them for Krishna? I should use them for Krishna. So he decided, yes, I will fight. So this is mukti. This is actual liberation. When you realize that your body, your mind, your senses, your hands, your legs, your eyes, your ears, they belong to Krishna. And then you try every endeavor throughout the day, you try to connect them to Krishna. Then you will be happy, your senses will be happy, your mind will be happy, and you will make progress in life. So we are superior energy. So we're meant to act for a spiritual way. We're meant to have a spiritual life. So another meaning of this verse is that if the Lord has hands, if he has legs, eyes, heads, faces, and ears, it means he has a form. He's not formless. Many people today say the Lord has no form. There is no form. It's just the highest thing is to pull out the light, the white light. It's formless. Light is, you see the light in this room, there's no form to it. You can't see a form. But actually, no, it does have form. Here he's saying, everywhere, his hands and legs, his eyes, heads, and faces. So if he has hands and legs and eyes and faces, then how can he be impersonal? How can he be formless? So this is a very nice verse for understanding. Also for proving that the Supreme Lord has form. Now there's a wonderful verse in Bhagavatam that explains the relationship of these hands and these senses that we have with the super soul. A very interesting verse. This is in the sixth canto. And it describes Mother Lakshmi. Does everybody know who is Mother Lakshmi? She is the wife of the super soul, or Narayan. She is the wife. So super soul is in your heart, everyone's heart. And soul is there. Your soul is there, individual soul. But Lakshmi is also there. But she is there also in another way besides being with Narayan. In Bhagavatam, it says that she is the form of our body, senses, and mind. She expands as our senses and our mind and our bodies. So that means if this hand and this leg and these eyes are an expansion of Lakshmi, should they be doing? If they're an expansion of Lakshmi, they should be serving Narayana. They should be serving the super soul. And this is a fact. And the proof is, at the time of death, you can't take them with you. They remain here. We have our spiritual senses. That's another thing. That is the nature of the soul. But it's also this material body and everything, it's expansion of Lakshmi, meant for the service of Krishna, or Rishikesha, master of the senses. So we should use our hands and legs, that is the conclusion of this verse, in the service of the owner of the senses. So now, the next verse is very similar to Vedic verses, Upanishadic verses, verse 15. You'll find this type of verse in different Upanishads, in different Vedas. The super soul is the original source of all senses, yet he is without senses. He is unattached, although he is the maintainer of all living beings. He transcends the modes of nature. At the same time, he's the master of all modes of material nature. So we have four differences here of the super soul and the soul. So who can tell me one difference of the that we find in this verse between the soul and the super soul? We find four qualities here of the soul, super soul, sorry, four qualities. What is one of those qualities? He transcends, okay, he's transcendental. Now the soul is transcendental by nature, but when the soul becomes in the material body, then he's not transcendental. So, but the super soul is never under the modes. He's never in this body. He's always transcendental. So that's the difference, that he's always transcendental. He transcends. But the soul is having a problem here in the material world. He cannot transcend. He's unattached. We are attached as long as we are here. Yes, he's always detached. There's another difference here. Right. He is the maintainer and we are the maintained. That is a big difference. Big difference between soul and super soul. That he is the maintainer and we are all maintained by him. Now, did you ever think about that? That you're being maintained? Or do you think you have to go out? I mean, of course, you have to go out and work and do your duty. But actually, the result is up to him. Somebody may work so hard and get nothing. And somebody may not work at all and just live, be able to live like that. So he is actually the maintainer. He is the one who's giving you the results of your work. And we are the maintained. Okay? Now what does this mean here? The super soul is without senses. He just heard he's got hands, legs, ears, eyes. Now the next verse is saying he's without senses. What does that mean? No material senses. Very good. Now, if you were an impersonalist, you would say, see, he has no senses. He's impersonal. There's no form. No, but why would they say that after the last verse? He has hands, legs, eyes, everything. And why would they say he's without senses? No, material senses. He has no material senses. Perfect. And his soul, when the soul is in connection with the super soul, he also can get those spiritual senses. He can have those spiritual senses that are beyond the material, transcendental. And another point in this verse, he's the master of the modes. And we are not the master. What are we? Servants. Now we may be servants of the modes sometimes. And before we become devotees, and even after we become devotees, we may become maybe servant of the modes. But our eternal position is to be servant of Krishna. And his eternal position is to be the master, or the enjoyer. He is the enjoyer, we are the enjoyed. So these are some very important differences between the soul and super soul. And it's important to know this because many people think that they can become God. They can become the super soul. But no, there's some big differences here that the soul can never have. He can never be the master. He can never be transcendental. He can be. He can be. But he cannot be the master. He cannot be the maintainer. Only Krishna is the maintainer. Only the super soul is the maintainer. We are all maintained. So, we think, many people think that because they cannot see God, therefore God is formless. He has no senses. Without ears, without eyes, without anything. Thus he has spiritual senses. So the next question is, what is the difference between material senses and spiritual senses? Okay, spiritual senses are used for the service of the Lord. That's one difference. The material senses means we use it for our own enjoyment. See, yeah?
The material senses are limited to perceiving only things of material matter.
That's right. Very good. Material senses are limited in their perception. And they're fallible as well. You may see things that are not there, or you may see things that are there, but just like the other day, we were trying to read some numbers, and because we didn't have our glasses, one person was saying it's a 1, and another person was saying, no, it's a 0. It took us about 10 minutes or 15 minutes to figure out what it was, because our senses were imperfect, especially at our age. So it was a very, you know, and it made a big difference in the phone call. So we could... Really, our senses, especially with age, they get more imperfect. I think maybe some of you have some elderly parents who cannot hear. Somebody was telling me, it was Hari Kirtan. She's going to visit her mother, or no, it was his mother and father, her in-laws. And one of them can't hear anything, and the other one has a hearing aid, but if she takes it out, she also can't hear anything. So that's what happens. When you get older, then your senses, you lose them one by one. You lose your sight, you lose your hearing. One by one, they just become dysfunctional. Because the nature of the body is to deteriorate, the material body. The spiritual body is not like that. So spiritual senses are eternal. You can see subtle things. But these senses, you cannot even see the mind. I cannot see your mind. You cannot see my mind. But we know it exists. You know the mind. I cannot see the soul, yourself as you are. You cannot see me as I am. But you know it exists. You know the mind at least exists. And the soul, we are learning about the soul. So with these senses, we cannot perceive what is beyond. The yogis can do a lot with their senses. Those who have mystic powers, they can hear things far away. They can see things far away. They can touch the moon with their finger. They can taste anything from anywhere. They have this power. But they cannot see spiritual things, even the yogis. They cannot see what is beyond this world. They're still limited within this material world. So therefore, we should understand how to use our senses, our energy senses, in a spiritual way. And then eventually we'll develop our spiritual senses. So I'd like to talk a little bit about how Krishna is the master of the modes. Oh, another point is that Bhakti has... Is that in this verse? Another verse. Thought it was here. He has a very special thing he can do with his senses. And I believe... Oh, it's in the next verse. I'll wait. Okay. Talk about it in the next verse. Yes. I guess I can wait for the next verse. Before that... he is master of the modes. Now, what that means, the modes are being controlled by different demigods. That means our material body also is being controlled by different demigods. If you scratch, that's one demigod doing that. If you sneeze, it's another one. If you see, it's the sun god. If you hear, it's the another one. Well, who's that? If you hear, I think the directions, demigods of the directions. If you smell, it's the Ashwini Kumaras. And if you taste, it's Agni, the tongue. The tongue is Agni. So different demigods are in charge of your senses, the material senses. If you use them for Krishna, then Krishna is in charge of all of them. So it's good to use them for Krishna. Because Krishna is controlling. You know, there are so many examples how Krishna controlled the different demigods. Indra was defeated when Krishna lifted Govardhan Hill. Shiva was saved from a demon by Krishna. So all these demigods are being controlled by Krishna, and they're being protected by Krishna. So let's read the next verse, 16. The supreme truth exists outside and inside of all living beings, the moving and the non-moving. Because he is subtle, he is beyond the power of the material senses to see or to know. Although far, far away, he is also near to all. So here it says Krishna is far away, and he's also near. Now, did anyone here have an experience where Krishna felt very far away from you?
When you're engaged in sense gratification.
Why is that? Why is that Krishna feels far away when you're engaged in sense gratification?
She doesn't even think about him.
You don't think about him, and you don't want to think about him. You'd rather he be somewhere else so he doesn't see what you're doing. Oh, what was that story? Someone told a really great story. Oh, yeah. It's just like there's a father and a son, and the son has got a girlfriend, and he wants to enjoy with the girl, but the father comes and sits next to him and says, "Oh, how are you doing?" And, you know, the boy can't wait for the father till the father goes away. You know? He says, "Oh, yeah, okay." And so it's like that. The soul is there, and the super soul is coming, you know, and you... Oh. Like somebody was telling me today, you think you could go somewhere else, but no, super soul's right here. You can't get rid of him. He's watching. So, but he does make us remember and forget. So, for those who want to forget that he's there, he helps you forget. There was one devotee who tried to leave Krishna consciousness. He did leave Krishna consciousness, and then he went. He became friends with a girl who was not a devotee. And then he went to her house, and then he saw a picture of Krishna in the house, and she didn't know what it was. She just bought it somewhere. He says, "Oh, no, I can't get away from him." So it's like that. You really can't, because he's in your heart. I mean, we may not see him, but he's there. And he's watching everything. So we feel he's far away when we're trying to forget him. We hope he's far away, but he's not. He's actually very close. So, when we are in that mood, in that consciousness of enjoying, we would prefer him to be far away because he's the only enjoyer, and we can't really enjoy. And you do realize that after some time in this world, that you can't enjoy. It's impossible. It's not. The world is not made that way. It's made for us to the prison house. So it's made for us to suffer and learn the lesson why we are suffering, because it's not the place to be for a soul who is eternal, full of knowledge and full of happiness. So, okay, Krishna is far away. When do you feel Krishna is near you?
When you're doing spiritual activities,
chanting, reading, you feel Krishna is near. Okay.
Vrindavan
is Krishna's place. Yes. The association of devotees. Very good. Yes, then Krishna is very close. So we have that experience. Now, for some people, Krishna is very far away. Now, of course, we've already described one type of person for whom Krishna is very far away, for those who want to enjoy. Now, there's another type of person for whom Krishna is very far away. Or super soul is very far away. Yes, the impersonalist. Because they want to be Krishna. The prophet said, a small rascal, he wants to be the head of a country. But a big rascal wants to be God. Because that means you're everything. You're in charge of everything. You're in control of everything. It's not possible. You can't become God. So for whom is Krishna very close? Devotees. Very good. You have studied. Okay. You know all the answers. You studied something. I don't know what. Yes. So Krishna is very close for the devotees. And so we want to attract Krishna. We want to bring him close to us. How do we do that? What attracts Krishna? How can we attract him to us?
By serving him.
Okay.
Saying the mantra.
chanting Hare Krishna, very good. That attracts him. He likes to hear his name. He said, even if you chant it correctly, I will keep your name in my heart. So they're doing that. Yeah. Serving the devotees.
Adding devotion to our service and our chanting.
Adding devotion to our service and chanting. Yes, the bhakti. The bhakti attracts. Yes.
Praying.
Praying. Good. Good. So all these things are ways to attract Krishna. And he's approached by someone who has this quality of bhakti, or love, or devotion, love and devotion. And Krishna is attracted. We can attract him. We offer him food. We offer him. And he's attracted by our devotion. He's not attracted by the food. Otherwise, Krishna, he went to, when he was sent as a messenger by the Pandavas to the Kurus to try to stop the war, he was invited to eat at Duryodhan's house. And Duryodhan was the enemy, of course. And he refused. He said, no, I will not eat at anybody's place who is not a friend, who is an enemy of my devotees. And then Vidura invited him, and he was a devotee, and he ate there, although it was not as opulent as Duryodhan's house. And I think it was even worse. He was offering the banana peels, and Krishna was eating them with relish, because Vidura was so excited just having Krishna that he forgot what he was doing, so he gave him the peels and threw away the bananas. So, but Krishna liked those banana peels much better than the feast that Duryodhan had offered him. Because they were offered with devotion. I mean, we shouldn't imitate. We shouldn't do these things. Try to be on that high level. So here's the verse I was really thinking about Krishna's senses. Because it's very hard to understand how Krishna is so far away. He's in Goloka, Durastam. It's very far. According to Brahma Samhita, Pantasta Goti Shatavat Sarasam Prakabhyo. But you can try to go to Goloka, which is the spiritual world, or even you can try to touch or see the tip of Krishna's lotus feet. Suppose if you go on an airplane at the speed of the mind for millions of years, you still won't get there. No. You know how fast the mind goes? In a second. Less than a second. Just think of, has anybody been to India here? So just think of the place you were. How long does it take you to think of that place? It's very fast. Very quick. So if you go at that speed for millions of years, you still won't get to Goloka. This is for the yogis, of course. Now for the devotees, we can go very fast. And sometimes the non-devotees say, you're offering this food, but I don't see how he's eating. Of course, they won't see. But how does he eat? He eats with his ears when he hears the prayers. He eats with his eyes. So that's another point about the senses of Krishna and Super Soul. They're interchangeable. His senses, he can do with his eyes, with his ears, what we do with our hands or with our mouth. He can. They're all interchangeable. He can eat with his, he can feel, he can hear with his hands. I mean, some clairvoyants have that. They can see with their hands. They can see colors, they can see things with their hands, but all Krishna's senses are like that. And we can see when he was in Mathura, he came into Mathura, and this one washerman came and he was arguing with him. Krishna cut off his head with his hands. So he didn't need a weapon. Now, none of us can do that. You know, cut off someone's head with our hands. Just one example. Of course, so every day he comes and he eats with his eyes, he eats with his ears. And he spiritualizes the food. So, supposing you know that Super Soul is watching you, how would you behave? Would you be good? Good try. we don't realize that he's right here. Turn it on. Oh, it's not on. Were we imagining it's on? It was on. It went off. Okay. It. So how would we behave if we do? Our father's sitting right next to us, watching us.
Yeah. We might try our best.
We might try our best, yeah. Oh. He's here. He's with me. He's watching me. Might feel good, actually, if you really like him.
Like, I'm scared of doing bad things.
Scared of doing bad things? Okay.
It's like when Guru
is.
He can see everything.
Yeah, and you think when he's gone he doesn't see anything. Yeah, the super soul can see. Guru, you might have your doubts. When he's away, then he may not be seen. But the super soul, you can't escape. Yeah. And when he's there, then you do feel more like, I mean, we are personalists after all. That we do have that feeling about Guru, that he's a person and he's here with us, and then he's more aware of what we are doing. Yeah.
Is that why we can't be Krishna, because we couldn't handle it at
this stage? Well, we can't see Krishna because we don't want to see Krishna, really. We don't have enough desire. We have more desire to see other things. If we really had desire to see Krishna, then we would see Krishna. We would see him. And Prabhupada said he's come very close to us as the deity. He's there so we can see him, we can touch him, we can clothe him, we can feed him. He has come. He's there. But you have to go down there to see him. You have to go down there. Yeah, it's a combination of our desire and the mercy of Krishna and our endeavor. And Krishna sees that our endeavor is very pure, and we really have the intense desire to see him, and he will give us glimpses of himself. May not be through the eyes. May not just be the eyes. We may see him with our tongue, by chanting. You may see him in the ears, by hearing. Huh?
That's not a different thing.
Yeah. Yeah. We may not, we think seeing means only with the eyes, but actually it may come first with the tongue. It may come first with the ears. Different people are different. And they come, yes?
Well, when you say with the tongue, does that mean that you say something that you're aware is Krishna talking rather than yourself? Or what do you mean when you hear it?
By chanting Hare Krishna. He's dancing on your tongue.
Okay. I'm just trying to translate that to the experience of what that might.
The tongue, you mean?
Well, I mean, how would your senses be aware of you seeing Krishna?
Well, I mean, you will see him face to face. He will appear. You will get the sight. You will get the sight. You can chant. But sometimes, before you get the sight, you'll get the feeling that he's there. You will feel the presence. Yeah, you may get the smell of him. You may get the sound of him. And they come in any one of the senses, whichever one becomes pure first. You can dance on your tongue and then come in your ear and then dance in your heart, which is what Rupa Goswami says. Or from the heart to the tongue to the ear. Okay. Yeah, it could be also through prasadam. For the tongue, if you can control the tongue, then if the tongue is controlled, then all the senses follow. And the tongue is the most difficult to defeat, to control. So you may even realize him through prasadam, eating prasadam. So one day you may taste a different taste that you've never tasted before. And you'll know this is Krishna. This taste is Krishna. Or you may hear something you never heard. You may hear the holy name as it is. You may taste the holy name. You may feel Krishna when you chant on your tongue. You may feel Krishna on your tongue or in your heart. It may come in any way. And all you know is because you will feel ecstatic. You will feel very happy, great happiness and a sense of release. That you'll see that you will be beyond the limitations of your material senses. So that day we all look forward to. And it may come and go, so it's not like you will get some nice perception of Krishna, and then it will stay. It will come and go at first. And then when you get on the very highest level, bhava, then it stays. Then it stays. Before that, it will come and go. You will get, even at the beginning of your devotional service, you get some taste. Otherwise, you won't be here, you won't stay. Some taste, which is a very higher level, you will get in the beginning. It doesn't stay, so that means you're not on that level of ruchi, or taste. You're still on the level of bhajana kriya, or performing devotional service. And when it doesn't go away, then you know you're on that level. When you're steady, when you're fixed, then you're on that level of being fixed. Okay, verse 17. Although the super soul appears to be divided among all beings, he is never divided. He's situated as one. Although he's the maintainer of every living entity, it is to be understood he devours and develops all. So the example of the comparison is with the sun here. Does he become divided? No, actually he is one. The example is given of the sun. The sun at the meridian, which is at noon, is situated in its place. But if one goes for 5,000 miles in all directions and asks, where is the sun? Everyone will say, it's shining on his head. Yes, if you're in New Zealand, you'll say, here's the sun. If you're in Australia, you'll say, oh yeah, here's the sun. If you're across the other side, in LA, where my son is, oh yeah, I see the sun. It's here. It's not. It's right in LA. So it may seem that you've got an LA sun, a New Zealand sun, an Australian sun. But no, it's only one sun. It's not divided. So you may think, well, I've got my super soul, you've got your super soul, and you've got yours. But it's not like that. There's one super soul. And he appears to be divided in different bodies. But no, he's one. He's one super soul. Another way you can understand it, more modern example, is the TV. The TV picture is in one place, but it's going in so many houses. It appears divided. But it's not. It's one picture. It's not like everyone's got their personal TV station that's coming into their house. It's one station going into many houses. So if a material thing can do that, then why can't super soul be like in one place but reflect in everyone's heart? So we all have our little TV in our hearts. And we can actually see the spiritual world. We can see everything that's going on there. We can see so many things in that TV. Of course, now we're not seeing, but we're seeing other things in our TV. We're seeing a lot of other things in our TV than the spiritual world. So our spiritual antenna is broken, our spiritual TV. This is the problem. So we have three repairmen here who can fix our spiritual TV so we can see things again. That is Guru, he's one repairman. And sadhu, or devotee, is another one. And shastra, or books like Gita. These are the three repairmen for the broken TV in our heart. And when our TV is fixed, then we can see the spiritual world and everything that's happening second by second, moment by moment, in the spiritual world, becoming broadcast into our heart. So the pure devotee has that spiritual TV. And that's the whole purpose of our movement, is to fix our TV and connect with the spiritual world. We want to connect. We want that connection with the spiritual world to be fixed. Now our relationship is a bit damaged, so we have to fix our relationship with Krishna. We have damaged it. It's not his fault. We have decided to try to enjoy ourselves. But now we're getting very nice knowledge that will help us to connect with him again. Verse 18, he is a source of light in all luminous objects. He is beyond the darkness of matter and is unmanifested. He is knowledge. He is the object of knowledge. And he is the goal of knowledge. He is situated in everyone's heart. Now we'll talk about the light first. Source of light. Now in this room we have some light. Where is that light coming from? The light bulb. Simple, right? It's an easy question. Now, next question is, this whole world is dark. You can see, look out the window, nature is darkness. Where is the light coming from? Sun. Okay, good. Now, where is the sun getting its light? Suppose you have a mirror, and the mirror is outside that door, and it's reflecting the light from this room out there, so there's light there. So it's, Prabhupada says that the moon is like that, it's reflecting the sunlight. But actually, the sun is also like a mirror, and it's reflecting light from somewhere else. Now, where is that light coming from? The sun is getting, has its source from another place. Mm-hmm. Yeah, eventually, but before that, it's getting Paramajyoti, very good. Brahman, there's a huge white light in the spiritual world, all around where all the planets are situated. Now that light, the sun, our sun, is getting its source from that Brahman. Now, the next question is, where is that Brahman getting its source? Where is the source of that Brahman? Yeah? Yes, it's Krishna. Well, it's toenail and also all around, too. Especially the toenails, though. They're very bright. They're very bright. Yeah, so, okay, very good. You have understood that the actual source of light is Krishna. And do you know why the sky is blue? It's a reflection of his body. From the Brahman. The Brahman, Prabhupada said, the Brahman is bluish because it's coming from his body. And that's why our sky is blue. It's the color of Krishna. Isn't that wonderful? You can remember Krishna by looking at the sky. Just look at the sky and you'll see what it's his color. The color of Krishna. So the last verse. And Prabhupada also said that this Brahman, this light, from Krishna's body is coming through so many layers of the universe. There's many, 10 different, or 8 different, 7 different layers of the universe. Earth, water, fire, air, ether, intelligence, not intelligence, false ego, mahatattva, different coverings. But this Brahmajyoti is coming through, this light is coming through all those coverings. And it's coming the actual color of Krishna. And then we see it. He said a little reflection we can see in the sky, not much. It's a reflection of the spiritual world. Yeah. Right. Also different times of the day it's different blues too. Well, I think it could be due to pollution also. Why there's different color, different shades, you know. I noticed that in Vrindavan. There's a lot of pollution, there's haze and I see different colors. I see in the different seasons, it's also like after the rain, then you get a very deep, beautiful blue color. In the summer, it's like not so. It depends on the season. It depends on the, the season. A lot. And if you're in the city or the country, it depends on your location. Yeah, some, I think, so, you know, some kind of blues, it's the pollution. I don't know, something about the ozone, no idea. I don't know what the story is, but could be that problem too. Whatever it is, somebody destroyed the ozone layer, so then it's coming differently. Okay, verse 19, does the field of activities, the body, knowledge, and the knowable have been summarily described by me. Only my devotees can understand this thoroughly and thus attain to my nature. So the end of this purport of 19 has a paragraph. Those three items have been described. Field of activity, the body. Process of understanding, both the soul and the super soul. It is especially described here, only the unalloyed devotees of the Lord can understand these three items clearly. So for these devotees, Bhagavad Gita is fully useful. It is they who can attain the supreme goal, the nature of the Supreme Lord Krishna. In other words, only devotees, not others, can understand Bhagavad Gita and derive the desired result. So therefore, we should all become devotees. Oh, there's a summary here before that. Verses 6 and 7 analyze material elements and certain manifestations of symptoms of life. These combine to form the body or field of activities. Verses 8 through 12 describe process of knowledge for understanding both types of knower of the field of activities, soul and super soul. Verses 13 through 18, beginning with Anadi Mat Param, continuing through Kriti Sarvasya Vishtam, describe the soul and the Supreme Lord or super soul. Okay? So if you understand this, if you're a devotee, you can understand it. If you're not, you'll always think, well, you know, how can he be far and near at the same time? How can he have, be with senses and without senses at the same time? These will always be a puzzle for you if you don't understand through the eyes of a devotee or through devotion. So, any questions? We have some time left here for questions. If anybody has questions. Yes?
When you preach to the many Indians, they say, well, we've got God in our heart, why should we go to the temple?
Mm-hmm. That is the preaching of the impersonals. God is everywhere, so why should we go to the temple? So you tell them, well, can you see him? Can you see him in your heart? Can you see him everywhere? If they say no, they say, then you have to go to the temple. If you want to see him, then you have to go to the temple. If you don't want to see him, if you think, okay, he's everywhere, then and he's in your heart, but if you want to see him and pray to him and give him some gifts, then you have to go to the temple. If you want to have a relationship with him, then you must go to the temple. Of course, they can chant Hare Krishna, that's also. But yeah, it's the impersonalist teaching in India. They say, why should we go to the temple? God is everywhere. Even my son, but it's not because he's an impersonalist, because I think he's lazy. If you want to offer food, I say, he looks often, and then he says, okay, I'm going to offer it. And I said, you have to offer it? Okay, then he puts the pot down where he's going to eat and says, Krishna, please eat. Thank you very much. To the deities, to the deities. He said, Krishna is everywhere. So, kind of misusing the philosophy there, but I think it's more of laziness. That he doesn't want to, you know, put it in those little bowls and go and give it to the deities. He's eager to eat, in other words. So, therefore, he kind of leaves out all the steps. You know, between the, you know, giving it to the deities, washing the plates, and then putting it there and taking it out. So he just shortens the process, I think. But they don't want to see God as a person. They don't want to have a relationship because then they'll feel guilty. I think a lot of Indians, they will feel guilty. I mean, they have a feeling that God is there, that Krishna is there. But if they either it could be laziness too. Oh, go to the temple. So far away. Could be laziness or it could just be stubbornness. But you can tell them, well, if you want to have a relationship, then you must go to the temple. Because it's the impersonalist idea. God is everywhere, so what's the need? Yeah.
It's really puzzled me the change from text 13 to 14.
Mm-hmm.
14 says everywhere him chanting me.
Yeah.
So it kind of seems like it's talking about the text before, or from us.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so that's the first question, like why does it say, why does it seem to lead on from talking about Brahman? And the second question is,
mm-hmm.
Why is the soul described as Brahman there? Like, it just seems like an opportunity for the Mayavadis to say, see, we're all Brahman.
Yeah. Well, we are all Brahman. I mean, it's true. We are all Brahman. So, that is, even in chapter 8 also, the answer is given that, you know, what is the soul? Soul is Brahman. What is the soul? And that is chapter 2 as well. So, but we should say, yes, we are Brahman. You're not para Brahman. See? They're saying, you're Brahman, and they think Brahman is the highest. but higher than Brahman is Param Brahman. Yes, we agree with the impersonalists up to that point. We are Brahman. We don't disagree. We are Brahman. But then we have to understand Param Brahman. Now, the reason why that verse comes next, and the reason why it is super soul, is because we have the purport there where Prabhupada tells us it's super soul. Otherwise, we would be confused. We'd think, oh, yes, is this me that has hands and legs everywhere? And we'll just go on all the verses. I am the source of all senses. You know, from there, yes, okay. I mean, some of the impersonalists probably do that. So therefore, that's why we have Prabhupada. And he explains to us, you are not, this is about super soul. Yeah. So there's a difference between Brahman and Param Brahman. They think Brahman is supreme. They don't understand that there are qualities of Brahman. There are different divisions. There are actually three divisions of Brahman. There's Brahman, then there's Paramatma, then there's Purushottama. There's the person Brahman, Param Brahman. So, of course, Super Soul and the Supreme Person are in the same category. But then for those who are even more, in 15th chapter deals more with that difference between Super Soul and Krishna. It will tell soul, Super Soul, and Krishna. And how Krishna is the source of the spiritual and the material of all of them. So here this is, from the verse you can't tell. There's so many things you can't tell. So therefore, Prabhupada, even in this purport, 13, he starts talking about Super Soul and explaining the differences between soul and super soul, so you don't get the wrong idea. Brahman means eternal, also, spirit. Brahma-yogi is made up of all the jivas, countless jivas. So we are. Yeah.
Is it right to say that
Exactly. It's the same as Chaitanya.
So that the soul and
yes. Chaitanya and Gayam and Purusha are all the same.
But there's two divisions.
Salt and super soul. Yeah. And for the impersonalists, there's no division. They just think it's all one, Brahman. For the devotees, we understand. That's why we have Prabhupada explaining to us in every purport the difference between the soul and the super soul. Right from verse 13 it starts about that. And every purport practically, what is the difference? Well, especially from 13, he makes us understand it, so when we get to 14, we don't get confused. Right in the purport of 13, Prabhupada says, Supreme Lord is super soul. At first he talks, first paragraph is about the soul. Second one's about the super soul. And then the last sentence, he talks about Brahman. Brahman is in relation to the individual soul. When the word Brahman is applied to the living entity, it is to be understood he is Vijnana Brahma as opposed to Ananda Brahma. Ananda Brahma is the supreme Brahman, personality of Godhead. So these terms, Vijnana Brahma and Ananda Brahma, refer to a five levels of realization. I think you must have had that earlier on. Anamaya, Pranamaya, Jnanamaya, Vijnanamaya, and Anandamaya. So Prabhupada is explaining, just to answer to your question, when the word Brahman is applied to the soul, he is Vijnana Brahman, which means the understanding that I am not this body. When Brahman is applied to that, and it's the understanding Vijnana, I am not this body. But as opposed to Ananda Brahma. Ananda Brahma is Supreme Brahma. So, then when you hear the verse, everywhere his hands, his legs, his eyes, his heads, and faces. In this way, the super soul, so Prabhupada puts it right in the verse, even though in the translation, so you understand it's talking about the super soul, not about me. And you can't say that everywhere your hands and legs. Can anybody say that? Can any person, any soul, can anybody say, everywhere are my hands and legs, my eyes and faces? Nobody can say that, except Super Soul. You can say that. And it's logical, so it's madness if anyone thinks this refers to me. I think you have to be crazy to think that everywhere are my hands and legs and eyes and faces. Oh, impersonalists are crazy, so therefore they think it refers to me. You can see part of the illogic of the impersonalist way. It's very illogical. And they don't think like that. They think, I am controlling the sun and the moon. Of course, they can't make the sun rise. But they think, they wait till sunrise and say, okay, I'm controlling the sun. Otherwise, it doesn't work. Yeah. Now, Prabhupada is very careful. He explained it in that purport, and now in the verse, super soul. Super soul, every verse from verse 14. Any other questions? Okay, so next week, it's verses 20 to, you want to talk?